Hello, listener. Welcome to the Gaslight Collective. I am the Collector. Come along now. Let me show you my collection of audio delights. Yes, go on, pick one. All are sure to tickle your fancy in one way or another. Ah, that's a good one you've chosen. Ninth Story Podcast with Jeanette and Immortal Alexander. Let's begin. We will make you believe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Ninth Story Podcast.
This is Season 6, Episode 2.
I'm Immortal Alexander.
And I'm Jeanette Andromeda.
If you are a new listener, welcome.
We are a podcast about writing.
We delve into the questions that writers want to know.
This is part two of our two-part discussion with Daniel Foytek of The Lift and The Wicked Library Podcast.
We are discussing the topic, Why Do We Write?
Enjoy. So, yeah. But, you know, tangents. We're back.
Right.
So, Dan, I'm gonna totally flip. Actually, we're kind of on this topic already, but what media has really inspired you to write?
Writing?
Like either books, movies, television.
Books, I guess. I mean, if you're talking about inspired me to write,
yes.
Yeah, I would say it would be books that I've read. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there are. You know, and I'll say also that there's a particular podcast that I've listened to that whenever I was sitting down and trying to write stories and coming up with ideas for things that I found to be quite inspirational. It's called Mysterious Universe, and it's some of the stories on there are obviously way out there. Some of them are interesting to contemplate. But for me, it's always been great story fodder in terms of, hey, what if this was actually true? I mean, there's movies that I've seen. I'm a very visual writer. So whenever I write, I'm basically taking notes about what I'm seeing. So whenever I write, we'll just pick a Lift episode. Whenever I wrote Nine Ways to Die, which is the story about, you know, Victoria's father and kind of what happened to him whenever everything went haywire at the building and kind of the history of what the music box is and how it came to be in her possession. You know, there's a couple of stories that Cindy and I have kind of worked on together in telling that story. But when I wrote that story, I very clearly saw the library that you ended up drawing. Mm-hmm. And I think I gave you quite a few notes on that particular piece of artwork. Like, here's images that are similar to what I see. Here's kind of the scene that I'm seeing. Probably more so than most of the other stuff I ever give you notes on. Because I saw very clearly what that library looked like. And I saw very clearly, you know, kind of her walking through the building and, you know, her talking to her brother. And then I saw very clearly, I watched a ton of Deadwood as inspiration. So there's another form of media because to me, I know it was somewhat stylized, but from what I've been told by historians, it's one of the most accurate representations of what an old West town actually was like in terms of just the grit and the dirt and, you know, I still wanted something that was somewhat sensationalized because you're telling a story and the people reading the story, there's a shorthand, you know, like if we say sci-fi or we say Western or if we say fantasy, there's certain images and ideas that come into your mind that kind of make the story feel more real to the reader. Mm-hmm. So I knew that I wanted to be, you know, somewhat fictional. I mean, the old West town and kind of the Victorian era, reading the biography of Teddy Roosevelt. And there's a lot of, I've always been fascinated by the Victorian era. So a lot of, history and just biographies of people factored into that story as well. So, gee, I guess my answer to your question is all kinds of media inspire me to write.
Yeah.
And just bits and pieces of it, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. And Jeanette, I mean, mostly like first, like the first thing of media that you consumed that really inspired you, Jeanette.
Well, I didn't get a chance to watch TV for a very long time. So books were my best friends. It was always books. And in fact, there was one huge series by an author named Tamora Pierce that has always been a big big part of my personality, not just my writing, but me. And that's where that idea of being a badass superheroine comes from, is in her books. She always has a female protagonist. They are always just incredibly real, well-rounded women who don't, you know, they don't give up. They just keep going and going and going and just fighting for what they believe in. And her stories affected everything for me. That's what I want from my life. That's what I want from my art. That's what I want from what I write. It's just like a big, huge chunk of the foundation block that is my personality. And then after that, once I always had access to movies, but TV definitely wasn't something I was able to get into. But Tim Burton's films have had a huge effect on me. There is that reason why I am so weird and draw such bizarre things. It's because Tim Burton showed me how cool it was in his movies, like Edward Scissorhands and Nightmare Before Christmas. And
it's a dark fairy tale element.
It is.
And I love dark fairy tales. I mean, the original fairy tales are very dark, but
yes.
His work is stunning.
It's so beautiful, and his stories are so beautiful, and Secret of Nim also. I never read the book, but the movie was a huge thing. My parents never bought it, but anytime I had the choice of what movie do I want to rent from the movie store, it was either Tales from the Crypt or The Secret of Nim.
You mean the Tales from the Crypt movie or
TV
the
shows?
TV shows.
I would rent a DVD of like one season or something.
And how old were you?
This would have been middle to high school time frame.
Okay, it's better.
They let me when I was more high schoolish, but Secret of Nim I was able to get my hands on a little bit younger because it was a cartoon. You know, how freaky could that be?
Because like Tales from the Crypt was
very adult.
Very adult. It was like, I think Showtime, I believe it was on.
Yeah, but there's a puppet on the front.
Oh god! But like there was like sex and murder and all sorts of things happening in that show.
Middle to high school. Yep. I was always drawn to either like super high fantasy where you have really kick-ass female heroines or just really dark, demented shit.
Awesome. As a kid for me, because my parents didn't even have, other than like a kid's version of the Bible, there was really not a lot of books around our house. My dad used to get into graphic novels as a kid. He had all his like Italian spy graphic novels. Like kind of like a Golgo 13 type of thing. And mostly we'd watch movies and shows. So movies really, you know, definitely got my imagination going. Things like Star Wars, The Never Ending Story, and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Anything, a lot of sci-fi, a little bit of sci-fi and fantasy always creeps into my stories. But I would have these traumatic moments of watching something that was way beyond my age range. Like Nosferatu or American Werewolf in London or something. They'd either be on television or whatever, or my dad would, you know, my parents would let me watch it when I was like 9 or something, and it would freak me out, and eventually I would get more and more comfortable with it. Or when I was reading like Neil Gaiman's Sandman or something, when I first saw that and I was in a comic book shop and I read like 2 or 3 pages of it, I immediately put it down because it was too freaky for me at that age. I had to come back from age like 15, come back to age like 22, and then like, okay, now I'm ready for this. It was a little too advanced, but it definitely spurred my imagination because of the fact that it was taboo or weird you know, like things like Army of Darkness or things like, you know, Evil Dead, because they were more playful, I wanted to, you know, get more into the films, and eventually they would become more and more comfortable with me, and then I'd be able to kind of delve into that kind of subject matter.
Everything we consume, we regurgitate.
Yeah, impact.
But it's, I was talking to a professional storyboarding artist who went to a really, really just top tier art school. And he was telling me about how the main professor there interviews the potential students. And he doesn't look for really accomplished artists. He doesn't look for those people. He looks for people who, when he says, so what do you do for fun? They say, oh, I go rock climbing and I read these books and I watch this TV show because it's so cool and they have all these big things, blah, blah, blah. He wants people who are excited and curious, because it's about building your visual reference file in your head. When you say a knight in shining armor, what do you see? Okay, what about a battle-weary soldier? Do you have those images in your head? Do you know what that feels like? Do you know where they are? Us as storytellers, we are so, it's so important to read those other books, to watch movies, to really keep yourself inspired so that you can build that visual catalog in your head, so that you have some context and something to work with. It's the clay we collect. The stories we hear is what we're sculpting with.
That's very good.
Soapbox, I like now the analogy. Off out from under my feet.
That's a great analogy.
Hey, Dan, what is your favorite story or storyteller?
That is very difficult. I will answer. I will tell you I have two. If I have to narrow it down to two. And I'm going to narrow it down to two because one is not a real person, and the other one is. And I'll explain that. So the one that is a real person, his name is Daniel Morden. And you will have an opportunity later this year to see why I think that. You can actually go back to some early episodes of the show, and if you dig, and you can find an interview I did with Daniel Morden, and also he told a short story in there. Also the other podcast that's kind of on hiatus, Listen, has a story by Daniel Morden, and he's a traditional storyteller, meaning, you know, like that's what he does for a living, is walk up on stage and captivate an audience. And to me, that's a powerful thing, because it, you know, like I said, in the very early part of this conversation, you know, it's one of the original forms of storytelling. And I think that there's a lot to be learned by going back to that type of storytelling and say, what can I take from this? What can I borrow from this? What can I use from this to make me a better writer and to make me a better storyteller in general, especially since a lot of my storytelling is narration and voice acting and that sort of thing these days. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nuances to how he speaks, and there's no substitute for being there live and just getting the feel of the crowd, because the storyteller plays off the audience and the audience plays off the storyteller, and it's this collaborative experience that I've not experienced anywhere else, because he adapts to the audience and vice versa. You know, there's energy that's traded back and forth, and you don't get that, in my opinion, even in like a live play. Well, you do to a certain extent, but whenever you go to a play or a live performance, there are certainly lines that you want to stick to. And I think that, you know, the traditional storyteller, he may have five or six different versions of his story that he tells, depending upon whether it's a short telling or he has more time, or, you know, there's little nuances where he changes little things. He knows the story so well that he can play with it to suit the audience in a certain way. So it's very unique. And the second person who's my favorite storyteller is Victoria, because to me, she is very real, and she has changed the way that I look at writing and story and storytelling. And She's a very unique character that, to me, maybe all authors. I mean, like, if we want to talk about Stephen King, maybe Roland is his version of her, where they become more than what you put into them. Mm-hmm. And part of that with her, too, is that she's been written by so many different authors. As part of doing the show, kind of our unique thing is that, you know, multiple people write her. And I guess that's akin to, like, when you watch a TV show, multiple people have written the Doctor. Multiple people have played the Doctor. So there's all these nuances. But for me, I mean, I've always said that I'm as much her creation as she is mine, because writing her and creating her and working with her has changed the way that I tell story and my confidence in myself as a creator. And she drives me forward. And I think that she always comes through in a certain way whenever I'm writing her. When I write her, I know when I'm not getting it right. You know, she tells me that's not the way I would say that. And she's compelling. So, yeah, it's probably a weird answer, but that's my answer.
I like it. And it actually didn't really surprise me that you said Victoria, because when you said someone who's not real, it's like, oh, I have a suspicion. My suspicions were confirmed. Who's my favorite storyteller? Alex, it's your mom. Your mom is the most amazing storyteller. And it's because she is such a hardworking woman, and she will spend hours and hours just, and I'm not being a stereotype, she just is your classic Italian mom, cooking and making sure that everything is perfect for her family. And the only time I ever really see her relax into herself is when she's telling me stories. And it's stories about you, Alex, and your sister as kids. It's about her as a kid. It's about the evil, legitimately evil nuns that did terrible things to her when she was at boarding school for a hot minute. And I giggled because it really wasn't. The stories that she tells are not. They're just like fairy tales. The way your mom tells stories about life, it's like this little fairy tale, this little anecdote that could be any little girl in Italy, but it's your mom. It's her stories. It's her stories of her sisters selling her for a dime because they wanted to go get gelato and they didn't want their little sister around. It's so funny. And your mom can tell the same story 12 times and it is just amazing. So even though she is a relatively more recent addition to my life, since I've only known you for 10 years out of my life, I guess that's almost half my life. A third. It's almost a third. I'm older than I realize. But she is definitely one of my favorite storytellers.
I think that's valid. I mean, that's kind of the experience that I had with my grandmother too, where, you know, she was just able to tell a story. And that's such an important, I don't want to say it's a lost art, but it's not, and maybe it's coming back more now, mm-hmm. with, you know, podcasting and audio medium, but there was a certain way of telling a story that, you know, lots of people had, you know, folk tales. That's why they called them folk tales. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, like, I think all of us know people that are just great storytellers as individuals, but, you know, there were, it was something important, and it was how you pass knowledge through the family. And I think it's a great answer.
I love your mom. She's awesome.
I love her too. She's amazing. Yes. The thing is, Jeanette gets these stories that some of the stories that I don't get. I definitely got a lot of stories, but it always surprises me where
she'll come home and tell him a story he never heard before.
Exactly. Because, you know, my mom doesn't have a lot of other women friends. So like to have time to sit down next to another woman and talk about her life, she feels a lot more comfortable and she can, you know, pull out these stories that I've never heard. Or even my dad doesn't even know. And I just found them really, really fascinating to really understand who she is as a person a lot deeper than I could have ever imagined.
Well, obviously you just need to sit in your mom's kitchen more often and
I need
the TV
to I need
off.
To pretend to be a woman and be just hidden literally, in a hidden camera somewhere, I don't know, in her brain.
Turn the TV off. That is literally the key.
I will give that a shot.
I recommend it. Oh no, we lost him. Or did we? What's
No, I'm here.
Okay. You know, our computer's another, just making terrifying noises.
Skype bloop. But for me, it's a little more, I guess, a little more generic, but it's Neil Gaiman, hands down. He's my favorite storyteller because he gets into my head in a way that no other writer has ever been able to, because he is constantly in a state of dreaming in his works. They're always in this otherworldly place that feels familiar, yet strange. And for like the Sandman series, especially for the story of the Caesars, if anybody's familiar with the Sandman series, and also the story of the cats, the story of the cat that goes around telling this tale with hopes that if enough cats dream it, things can change. And it just got me thinking in ways that I never thought I could, and it really definitely inspired me to get into writing as more of a serious thing. And this was in my early 20s when I started getting into Neil Gaiman's works and then mooring into his novels and American Gods and all that, which is an amazing show as well. They just came up with a television show version of that. It was really, really cool. But mm-hmm. I just love the way he thinks.
He's not doing any more book tours either, though. You know, I mean, I don't know if you saw that show. I mean, I totally get why he's not. But I think what he'll do is more like what he did that you guys got to see and what I got to see with, you know, An Evening of Stardust. It's more like a lecture.
Yeah.
You know, and then there may be a small signing component to it where, you know, you can get a limited number of tickets to actually, you know, get a picture taken, maybe get one thing signed or something. Mm-hmm. But that's crazy. The amount of like him looking forward to just dunking his entire arm into a bucket of ice at the end of the day is I got a feel for that, you know.
Oh, of course, of course. But, you know, like I just really enjoy his nonlinear thought. And that's what subconscious thinking is. It's nonlinear thought. That in the waking world, we're all concerned with all these niceties and keeping things in an orderly fashion and things under control. And in the realm of dreams, that just goes out the fucking window. Like, you don't have to have control any longer. You can be as unabridged as you need to be and go in wherever you want. And it really got my brain thinking about just the lack of barriers there are in writing. And, you know, coming from a person that was so focused on film and went into film and then came back and said, you know what, I need to get back to the core of story. Writing is where it's at. It's not just about the visual medium. It's about the story, because if the story doesn't feel genuine, it doesn't feel correct, it doesn't connect to the person who reads it, then it's going to falter in any form that you translate it to.
Yeah, I mean, I, you guys know, and if anybody has listened to past episodes of this show prior to you guys taking over, people know, you know, I love Neil Gaiman. I think he's fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, I was lucky enough to get to read one of his stories on the Wicked Library, and lucky enough to get to meet him. And he's an amazing storyteller in all mediums. It was too easy of an answer for me to say Neil Gaiman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. I like your, for me, anyway. I do like your answer better anyway.
Well, yeah, because then we'd have the same answer.
on my initial, on my initial short list, it was when I was first writing this down, I said, okay, who are my favorite storytellers? Well, it's Tamora Pierce, whom I've mentioned multiple times. It's Neil Gaiman. It's Stephen King. And then as we were talking, I realized, no, I know who my favorite storyteller is, and it's not anyone that most of you would have the opportunity to meet. Though,
right.
Alex, obviously, you've met her.
Yeah, I think we know each other. It's cool.
Just a little.
I'll get you an autograph later. It's fine.
Oh, sweet. I'm gonna have to tell her that I she's my favorite. So on the note of our favorite authors, what are you reading lately, Dan? I have an inkling as to what your answer is, but I'm curious.
You know, it's a sad thing because I used to read so much. And I don't have the time to read the way I used to. I listen to a lot of audiobooks, which is not the same experience. Mm-hmm. But if my choice is not reading at all or listening to audiobooks, then listening to audiobooks is the right way to go. I listen to a lot of podcasts as well, which almost every podcast that I listen to is story-based. So I think that's valid as in reading, if we want to use reading in the inverted quotes. But I'm reading a lot of Wicked Library stories. We have a ton of people that submit stuff to the show, and there's a lot of great stuff in there, and it becomes a very difficult task sometimes to come up with the short list because there's only so many stories that I can do physically while I still have a full-time job, you know, unless people want to send lots of money to Patreon and then I can do it full-time. I'm reading a lot of very talented independent writers who, without the show, I don't think many people would have been exposed to. Now, I mean, obviously there are some that people know who they are. They're definitely, even some of these indie authors have really nice followings with a lot of great fans. But, you know, in terms of like me, I would probably never be exposed to some of these folks if it wasn't for doing the show. So I think it's a great honor that I get to read even the stories that don't get chosen. I get an opportunity to read some really great horror fiction. And you know, that's always the goal, is to try to promote them as much as possible and have as many other people discover them so that, you know, their work is shared with a larger base than possible otherwise.
And something that I've noticed through doing the interviews for the Wicked Library is so often when these authors are talking about the stories, especially the ones who are, this is their first story on the Wicked Library, that story that we picked up was often the misfit child. It was the story that no one else was brave enough to share because it was just too weird or too dark. And the Wicked Library is just the little island of misfit stories. And I love it. I love that we can bring in the people who are out of the weird kids in the corner, the weirdest kid in the furthest corner.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's there's definitely stuff in there that's a little more mainstream. There's stuff in there that's a little tamer from time to time, but you know, that was one of the goals that I had when I took over the Wicked Library, was I wanted to, because as myself being newer to the horror genre, I wanted to explore all the subgenres. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought, you know, this is a great voyage to take the listener on too, to give people an opportunity to maybe hear something that isn't the normal story that they would pick up and read, mm-hmm. but you know, now that they're exposed to it, they're like, you know what? I kind of like this. Maybe I need to seek out more by this author. You know, and just having it, I think it's the most fun when I do things that I'm learning and I get to kind of share that with the audience, with the listeners too, where they're coming along for the ride and being exposed to something new.
Definitely. And I enjoy that about the Wicked Library. I think that's why the Wicked Library, not to just go off on a total tangent, but it's different than the other horror. It's true. It's different than the other horror story podcasts that are out there, because a lot of the other ones either have a very specific subgenre they're focused on, mm-hmm. or like a really controlled sense of tone, which isn't a bad thing at all. It makes for a really great, concise show, but the Wicked Library is able to be the unique kind of weird duck in the corner that allows every little facet of this huge, it's really a huge subgenre. Horror is a huge subgenre. And the Wicked Library allows us to actually go explore little other corners. It is like walking into a library. What's in that corner? Well, that's biographies. Oh, cool. Let's read about this monster. Hi, H.H. Holmes. And then over here, you know, and you just wander around, pull out books and find something new. It's I think that's why I like the Wicked Library anyway, but I'm very biased. So,
well, rah-rah. Yeah, that's all right. It's all right. We're all part of Ninth Story Studios here. It's a mutual admiration society.
It's true. And what am I currently reading? Well, it's very, very similar to what you're reading, Dan.
Hey.
Because I've been doing batch processing of all the interviews for The Wicked Library Season 7. So I have been mostly reading their stories. I have still, I'm so sorry to the people who are waiting for book reviews from me, who have sent me books forever ago. But I'm working my way through the list of books that have been sent to me, and I'm looking forward to this vacation that we're going on, because I'm going to download every single one of them onto my Kindle and read as many of them as I can during all that downtime when we're on the plane or in a taxi or whatever. I'm going to be reading as many books as possible. So there are a lot of, again, they're all mostly indie horror authors, mostly indie authors, actually, but all horror authors for that. And that's what I'm looking forward to reading. The other things I've actually been reading, I've been reading The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, which is amazing and very helpful in getting your life together. Also, mm-hmm. The 4-Hour Body, also by Tim Ferriss, because I wanted to lose weight really badly, and this is actually working because I am lazy when it comes to diets. So I've been reading lots of small business books, self-help books, especially in the last few months, because I just really want to, I want to make what we're doing work. I want to do podcasts and do art full time, and I am actually doing it right now, which is surprising, though I still have a part-time job that is not really fully creative. It's still, I'm not working fully for myself, but it has been very satisfying to read these nonfiction books, which is new for me.
Yeah.
And just really dive into something that I've always been very intimidated by. So now podcasts were the gateway drug to being an entrepreneur. So there you go. That's what I've been reading. A lot of business books.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, and I'll tell you, one of the other things that I've spent a lot of time doing is not reading. Mm-hmm. As writers, as creators, we very much, I at least, always felt guilty whenever I wasn't doing something related to that pursuit, when I wasn't reading or editing or writing or, you know, producing something, recording. Mm-hmm. If I would take a couple hours to play a video game, or take, you know, a few hours to go out to the park with my dogs, or work in my garden or whatever, I always felt like I was not working, not doing anything. And you really, if you want to be a good writer, you really, or creator of any sort, you really need that time away where you're not actively knee deep, arms deep in it. You need that time to decompress, meditate, do things with your hands, to just be away from it, because mm-hmm. a lot of times that's when inspiration strikes, is, you know, when you've forgotten the problem, and I think you come back to your endeavor and you're a lot more productive. So those times for breaks and for taking care of yourself and actually living on this planet are super important, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I struggle to give myself the time I need to be a human being. So it's good to hear that reminder.
Well, it's like working out. If you keep working the same muscle every single day, you're going to see zero results. But if you give your muscle a day off, then it's going to have time to heal, and now you can actually see results. I think the brain works the same way as your rest of your body, as far as trying to exercise those things and keep those things fit. You definitely need to give them a break as well. Otherwise, they just start to break down.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you get burnout. You will get burnout if you just go balls to the wall constantly. I mean, I'm at the park with the dogs almost every day now. I'm out in my garden every day now. I take time to watch TV, to do something mindless every day. Watching TV being something mindless. And, you know, it's just, you know, I can't do as much as I would love to do. There's only so much time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, I don't want to look back 5 years from now and go, you know, I didn't take any time for myself. You know, I didn't take any time to do something that I wanted to do just for the pleasure of doing it. Not that writing's not a pleasure, but, you know, it's not the only pleasure.
Yeah, of course.
And I think just, us being able to say that says we are actively on the right track, because it's the people who, and there's nothing wrong with being in that beginning stage where you are just struggling to make time to write, to tell stories, to create the things that are in your head. We are all in the next step where we've accepted that this is what we are doing regardless of whatever else is in our lives. And now we're at that point where we can say it's okay to not be obsessively focused with creation and just take one step back so that you don't completely burn yourself out. And I think every artist will come to this point. That first step is like, I need to make things. And you make things frantically and you don't sleep and you just keep working and working and working. And then eventually you accept it's not going to disappear. The inspiration isn't going to just poof out of your head. It's still going to be there. And now that you're comfortable creating things, it's almost like muscle memory. You can take a day off. It's okay.
Yeah.
So what am I currently reading? Well, as I had said before, in my household growing up, we didn't have a lot of books around until my sister got into high school and started reading more and having more novels around. There wasn't a lot around the house. I wasn't really inspired to do that until later. So I'm currently reading the collected works of H.P. Lovecraft for the very first time.
Whoop, whoop.
I know it's sacrilege. It probably completely discredits me as any kind of a writer, but you know what? I've always been interested in what he creates, because I've seen things that have been inspired by him. I had this video game, Eternal Darkness was amazing, and it was very H.P. Lovecraft inspired. I'm like, this sounds really interesting. And I finally got myself to sit down and start reading his works, and I find him to be my favorite writer of all time right now. I really just getting into it and reading his works, I just really love the way he writes. I love the way he makes up words. I love the way he, you know, paints a scene and paints a scene of madness and gets you really into the thick of the atmosphere. It's really, really interesting and really amazing. And I'm going to read every single one of his stories multiple times. And I'm just excited about how those things are going to inspire me next.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I haven't made my way through all of Lovecraft's work, and I've enjoyed what I've read so far. There's a ton of Lovecraft content out there, so there's no shortage to read through.
I've read chunks of his stuff. I have definitely not read the complete works of Lovecraft. So you're catching up, but We're not that far ahead of you.
That's right.
I'm just proud of you for, as someone who's known Alex for a while, to see him from just being fixated on movies to spending more time with graphic novels to now really picking up full books more often. I'm excited to see you turn into the bookworm that I am.
I have mutated him. A good influence.
She is a good influence, because her and her sister are like two little librarians.
We are. It's true. And you've exposed me to much better movies than I would have reached out for. So thank you. We're good for each other.
Yeah.
It's good.
When saw the new Planet of the Apes movie, that was excellent.
It was actually really good. So Dan, what are you working on right now? / what's a project that you want to get started?
What am I working on? I'm working my way through the end of season 7 of The Wicked Library. I'm doing my very best to try to stay on target and on task with season 2 of The Lift, so that we can get to the end of the season and get season 3 kind of well underway before we start dropping episodes, so that it goes a lot more smoothly. There's so much I want to do, you know. I mean, I'm writing a couple of stories for The Lift. I have a couple of stories that I'm writing just because I want to write them. And I have a little story that I shared with you recently that was something I kind of set away. Is a children's story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to get back to finishing that thing up. And I think that that has the ability to be an audio drama, fully cast.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I'd like to do it in both formats. You know, I'd like to do it in the written format and also kind of create a an audio drama version of it, since that's kind of naturally where my brain goes these days.
Don't fight it. Just keep making stuff, Dan. You make beautiful things. I really want to hear where that story goes, actually.
What else am I, so I do another podcast, but it's only for adults. It's my friend Dick Dangle is a connoisseur of all things adults, and he has a great desire to get his love of adult entertainment out into the world. And so I sit with him and I help him put together a show. Listen, we'll come back at some day in the future. It's one of my most regretted projects that I had to let go of, which is live storytelling captured at storytelling events like the one we're going to in October. It's like it's October, right?
Yes, it's in October. And
I have so many things. I don't have a calendar. And I may be getting together here in a few weeks with my old friend Craig Weber and my friend Steve Matico, and sitting down for two weekends in a row for 6 hours straight, and recording a little podcast, limited run podcast, that I'll probably dump like Netflix. In other words, we'll do 10 episodes and I'll just put them all out there.
Nice.
So yeah, the goal is to kind of magical mystery tour it and just sit down in a room for 6 hours and record what happens, and hopefully that becomes, you know, 10 episodes of a podcast.
Nice.
because I don't have enough going on. I just have to do other stuff. But that's the thing, when you create stuff, you always want to do more, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And it doesn't matter how busy you are, you still have that desire to make something new. Yes. What am I working on right now? Story-wise, I'm still working on that story for the lift.
Yay!
I'm so slow at writing. It is very difficult for me to finish a story to a point where I feel good with it. And in fact, Nelson Piles has agreed to help me with that story, but I wanted to get it good enough to send it to him before he takes... I should just send it. But I'm working on that.
Cindy's a great editor too, you know, so.
It's true. I need to take my claws out of it and send it off so that someone else can tear into it. And then with feedback, it will get better. It's just hard for me to take what I am saying very logically and actually act on that logic, because I am an emotional creature.
Aren't we all?
And then the story that I shared just a snippet of last episode of last season was, that one is still getting tinkered with a lot. I'm really enjoying where that story is going, and I want to explore that world even deeper. So I'm making sure to bring a notebook with me on our trip so that I can just sit. I doubt we'll have a lot of time just sitting and just enjoying things, but I am anticipating to make time to do that. There's so much family in Italy that we're going to, it's just good luck getting any moments. But
well, all you need is 10 minutes anyway. A day, Jeanette.
Exactly.
10 minutes a day will get you a book by the end of the year.
It will. So I want to continue working on those two stories. And then something that is taking up a lot of my brain wave function at the moment is I am with reckless abandon diving into really making my YouTube channel a real thing for the art side of what I do. So making an art-based YouTube channel with tutorials and fun arty adventures and me being a complete doofus. So that's...
And I'm actually super duper excited about it. This is the first time I've ever seen Jeanette do something for YouTube that felt just like her and supernatural without, not supernatural, but super extra natural. And just felt like an extension of her, because it's her giving instruction. I don't know if you surprise yourself about your level of knowledge of art, but, you know, as far as just how extensive it is and how easily you can give instruction, because not everybody can give effective instruction and do it in a way that's entertaining.
I've had very good teachers, and I am parroting a lot of what they've taught me, and I have now been very focused on watching artists on YouTube, which is part of where this obsession comes from. When I get obsessed with something, I can't just sit by and enjoy it. I have to go, but I should make that. So that's the next stage of, I should make that. Like podcasts, you know, I couldn't just enjoy podcasts. I needed to join you on yours, Dan, and then take it over.
Of course. No, I mean, I think that's something that's really important. I mean, you know, what Alex was saying about, you know, it feeling like it was something that was truly you. It's so important when we make something that it's something that we enjoy and it means something to us. And it's not what we think that the public wants or what we think that, I mean, it helps to know, like, what is out there that people want that I can do and that I'm going to enjoy. But yeah, you can't just like be like, well, everybody loves this, so I'm going to make this. I hate it, but I'm going to make it because I think it'll sell. That's just always a recipe for disaster, in my opinion.
It never works. It really
never
works.
You just end up hating it.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of a monster that'll just keeps growing. So, and also the blog is still a thing that I'm doing, the Horror Made blog, but it's taking a massive step back because of that exact question. Why was I making the Horror Made blog? At first, it was just to write some sort of random horror-based content to support our, at the time, Haunting TV YouTube channel. And through writing that blog and meeting people like you, Dan, and getting involved in the podcast community and just everything that's happened since then, I realized there are a few things that I really just want to zoom in my focus on. It's storytelling. I want to improve as a writer, and I really, really, really just want to put, like, every waking moment into making art and being more than what I am right now, which is actually in a good spot as far as I'm feeling good. I'm feeling confident. Okay. Don't judge me.
That's great. That's awesome.
But I think like when we did our YouTube channel, like we both really just had no idea how to format the content and how to make something that felt cohesive. And I gave, you know, Jeanette very little instruction as far as, you know, what she was going to do with the YouTube channel. Usually I would produce or direct something or help her write something that we were doing, but she really did the majority of it on her own, other than the contact, the idea that this is going to be more educational. Mm-hmm. And then for her to pick a topic, you know, that somebody else did, and then maybe a tackle that or ask questions of what people that want to learn art want to learn, and it's, which is parodying what we're doing with the Ninth Story podcast, is asking questions that what do people want to know, they want to learn this thing, and how do you approach that. But it just felt extraordinarily natural, and I just really am super proud, and I'm excited to delve into cutting this first YouTube video of hers for her new channel, for the Jeanette and Drobin art channel, and seeing where that goes. And for myself, I'm working on my book, and I'm now going to be delving more deeply into that and trying to get at least a good third of it done before the end of the year, where I feel like I have a solid chunk of it, not just a couple of chapters, but a really solid chunk of it done, or more, maybe the whole thing done by the end of the year. And that's kind of what my goal is. So transitioning into that, what is everybody's goals for these, you know, passion projects of theirs by the end of the year? And Dan, for, you know, the ones that you've been working on, what are your goals by the end of the year?
Not to be behind on shit. not to take on extra stuff that I can't handle. Mm-hmm. To enjoy what I'm doing, and I'm well on the way towards that goal. So it's pretty simple. I just, you know, you can't keep doing something if you don't love it. And mm-hmm. if you try to do more than you can, you're going to end up hating it. So, you know, I'm just trying to achieve balance. There's my goal. I want to continue to achieve balance and to be more in love with what I'm doing. And there is another little secret project that we're working on, but it's not for, I don't know, it's not going to be the end of this year. It may not even be the end of next year. Our date is 2019. But I think it can be done by 2018, but that's just my own naivete. And that is, we're working on an anthology for The Lift that's just going to be written. It'll be all new stories. They'll be significantly longer than the stories that you normally hear on The Lift. And I've already lined up 8 of the 9 authors, because there will be, of course, 9 stories.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
There has to be. If it were anything else, I'd be very disappointed.
Yeah. And I know who is doing the cover of the book, too. So
why? Who might that be? She says cheekishly.
That might be you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to work on that. And I'm also excited to do the artwork for the upcoming season of The Lift for the main show logo, which is pretty cool. Rawr, rawr, rawr. I'm just going to make animal noises because I'm excited.
And she's drawing animals right
I'm
now.
Also drawing animals as we're on the... on Skype together. Sweet. Because I have to doodle, otherwise I'm not fully paying attention, believe it or not. I focus better when I draw.
Yeah, it keeps that part of the brain calm.
It does. And I did this in school too. I would be in classes doodling not just doodles, but full-on illustrations inside of my notebooks while taking notes for class, and a teacher would go, "Hey, Jeanette, blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, it's exactly blah, 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 blah." And I would, like, just answer the question really in-depthly, take a moment, take it another step further, and then go back to drawing. They go, okay. Because they thought they could get me, but I was paying attention.
That's right.
I have to doodle.
And Jeanette, what is your goal for your creative projects by the end of the year? For yourself by the end of the year?
Okay, so... there's a lot of goals. So goals that I've been working on throughout the year have been to make myself more of a priority, which is to take care of my health and take care of my mental health. And I've been doing a lot better with that. I've been making sure to take time for friends and family and adventures and doodling for myself, which is part of why the YouTube channel is now a major goal coming up. To make one video every week is my goal. For that is based around having fun with art and teaching people how to draw and enjoy it. For my stories specifically, I want to finish this Lift story before the end of the year. Dan, I really want to send that to you. If no other story gets finished, I want to finish that one. That needs to be on my front burner. So, because I hate saying, I'm still working on it. It's been a year, Jeanette. I'm still working on it.
Yeah, we just pushed you back to season 3.
Yeah, that's fine. Just need to finish it. Whether it's good or bad, finish it and send it to you.
Just keep doing different drafts and see what happens, because you never know where it's going to go.
Actually, there's a new version that started. It's so much more interesting now. And it's so much darker. I don't know if it's too dark. But it was getting pretty dark the last time you read it. It's funny because it started off as it was supposed to be kind of a joke episode, and now it's like, let me delve into my deepest sorrows and share that.
I think you should just maybe just watch Pontypool again and then write it another draft.
That's actually a pretty good idea.
Have you seen Pontypool yet, Dan?
I have not. I have the there's a book version, yes?
Yes, it came from a book.
Because I seem to remember downloading that on my Audible at one point and never actually listening to it.
Is good. You should listen to it. Or just watch the movie. The movie was actually really good too.
Sweet.
And now back from our movie review podcast, it's Jeanette not able to enunciate things anymore. Blah, 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 blah. So, there we go. Dan, thank you for joining us back on the Ninth Story. I'm sorry it took us an entire season to invite you back.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
But I'm glad you were able to join us here, because I like hearing, especially about your writing process, and I like hearing what you've been up to, because, you know, you're always doing like 12 other things than I realize.
Oh, we haven't even scratched the surface, but that's okay.
Sure.
That's enough to keep everybody busy. Mm-hmm.
And thank you for giving us the first two episodes of our season, because we've been talking for 2.5 hours.
Yeah. This is going to be a two-parter for sure.
Which, I always have a lot to say.
Well, it's a good thing. I mean, I think we're both so engrossed.
That's why I used to have a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're both so engrossed with the conversation that, you know, for any other person that came on, because we were doing typically just like a straight interview, it didn't feel organic to have an interview be that long. We really didn't want a super long episode past an hour. Mm-hmm. And But this conversation really, really was just so engrossing that I think I'm happy with the fact that we talked for this long because we got so much out there and we were able to reach places that I think we wouldn't have if we had kind of made it more compact and try to contain it.
Well, it's a kickoff for a new season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I don't know. I'm excited. I'm excited about the season. I'm excited about the new format. And, you know, since I've been reading all these business and entrepreneurship books, going in well-researched and planned is a new thing for us. But it all makes sense now to actually have a scheme moving forward. Not scheme, but like I was thinking schematic.
Like an outline.
An outline. We're not pantsers anymore.
You'll be great.
What? We were by the seat of our pants podcasters. We have now changed to outliner podcasters. So to those of you who are still listening after 2 episodes and 2.5 hours of talking about writing, this has been the I was about to say the Wicked Library. Good Lord, I've been recording so many of those interviews. This has been the Ninth Story Podcast. Thank you for listening. And do, if you have answers to any of the questions that we asked each other during this episode, tweet it at us. Or you might need more characters. So really, you should go to the Facebook page and share that.
Yeah. If they want to find my crap, they can find that over at ninthstory.com.
Yeah.
It has links to all my stuff.
It's the best place
Twitter
to go.
Twitter accounts and everything. That's right.
We'll also have everything. It's true. We'll also have everything in the show notes so they can just go harass you in all the many places that you are.
Oh, for those who like to go to the website afterwards or during.
Or during. It's true.
Yeah. During's better.
It is. Why did you guys wait so long to go to the website?
Right.
What's wrong with you?
It's over now.
Come on, man. The momentum's gone.
That's right.
And for those of you that stick around past the two commercials at the end of our show, for you, those of you that are not aware, we do a little Skype intro that goes awry every single time that pops in after those two commercials. So there's a little bonus for you to stick around.
We sang That's you right. a song, Dan.
Aw, that's sweet. I can't wait to hear that.
It starts with boop, boop, boop. Hi, you've made it. I don't even remember how Skype test calls.
Thank you for calling the Skype call testing service.
That's how it starts.
If you can hear yourself, but not blah, 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 then something is wrong with your audio recording settings.
It's like you've heard that a lot or something.
Yeah. I also did it right before our call, too. So.
Nice.
I always test the equipment. I come prepared.
It's important. Otherwise, yes. Suddenly you're like, oh, I recorded an entire interview and there's no audio.
Yes.
Yeah, I did that before.
That's awesome.
Not really.
Be prepared, kids. That's just the lesson of the day is be prepared.
Correct.
Be prepared.
And thank you so much, Dan, for coming on. And thank you so much for listening. And we will see you next time on the Ninth Story Podcast. Thank you so much. Welcome to season 6.
Hello. Welcome to Skype call testing service. Bow. After the beep, please record a message. Afterwards, your message will be played back to you.
Hello, Dan, our old friend.
It's good to see you once again.
We're gonna talk about writing. I'm Immortal Alexander.
And I'm... Translation, I'm Jeanette Andromeda. Sometimes I speak in alien gibberish. Welcome.
One more time, ready?
Ninth Story Studios, giving story a voice.